Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here to talk about Social Security. And to lead us in that discussion is Lester Austin, a retired public affairs specialist, a good friend of the show. Known Lester for 30-some years, and basically you say good morning to Lester and you're done.
It's always a great pleasure to be here and talk about the issue of Social Security from a retiree's perspective.
Okay, and John Elliott, retired federal employee, retired seminar presenter, answers questions on For Your Benefit. I'm Bob Lines. I'm a finance tax type with NITP. And let's start off with just the basics, Lester, so that we'll take it from the basics and then beyond by the end of the show. But Social Security, how does one qualify for it? Because we got a group of people out there that are maybe retired CSRSers, maybe current CSRSers, and they might go, this is really a non-issue for me. But is it? What would it take for them to get a Social Security benefit?
Well, talking about the civil service employees, those individuals that are hired January 1, 1984 and later, they're under what is called FERS. So they're paying into a three-tiered package, which one is Social Security, civil service, and a thrift savings plan. So those folks are already covered under Social Security based on the 10-year work, being at least 10 years of service under Social Security.
Okay, so somebody new hired back that long ago, or even recently, once they hit 10 years, they're in there. But the retired CSRSer or the CSRSer that is not retired, assuming they had no other Social Security covered wages during their lifetime, what would make them qualify if they wanted to qualify, or if they just happened to do something on the side while they're working or when they retire? What gets them to the goal line?
Well, what you find is a lot of civil servants, they might work part-time jobs while they are working in the civil service sector. And if that's the situation, then they would need to earn 40 quarters of coverage. 40 quarters of coverage represents 10 years of work. That work can be sporadic or that work can be consecutive, but the bottom line is they must have 10 years of work. Anything less than that, they would not qualify.
And I'm an example of that. I retired under the older SERS system. I had about 25 credits before I joined the federal service. And then I worked doing retirement seminars, as a matter of fact. And I completed my, 15 credits at some point. But I have 40 credits, so I will get a Social Security benefit when I deign to apply for one. I'm letting those delayed retirement credits kick in, and you can explain what that is. I mean, I can too. But I will get a Social Security benefit, but it will be cut almost in half by the windfall elimination provision.
And you're absolutely correct about that, because here you are, civil service, and you're under the old civil service annuity system. So based on that, you, prior to entering the civil service, you had earned 25 quarters of coverage under Social Security. So you didn't qualify at that point.
No.
So once you went out and did a part-time job and earned the additional 15 quarters, then you became eligible.
Right.
The minimum number of quarters of coverage is 40. 40 quarters for those individuals born 1930 and later.
Can I ask you a question? Years ago, a quarter to me meant a quarter of a year, so that I had to work. I remember I said years ago, I would have to work four calendar quarters to get my four credits for the year. That's not the case anymore, I don't believe.
Right. Prior to 1978, a person had to work and earn a minimum of $50 in each quarter in order to be entitled to a quarter of coverage. Prior to 1978, say the person worked in the first quarter, earned $3,000. And then when they looked at their Social Security record, they saw for the year 1975 that they had only earned one quarter. Because that's only because they worked in the first quarter, worked at no other time during the course of the year. Therefore, that person's only eligible for one quarter of coverage. After effective in 1978 and later, the amount went up from $50 to $250. Also effective in 1978, the law stated and it stipulated that once a person had earned $1,000, whether it was the first day, the first week, middle of the year, last day, last week, that person, once they had earned $1,000, they would be entitled to 4 quarters of coverage.
So I could work one day if somebody was crazy enough to pay me $1,000 for the day. And that's all I worked the whole year.
Effective in 1978. Yeah. So if you worked on December the 25th, Christmas Day, and you earned $1,000, then you had earned 4 quarters for the course of the year. But what I would like to say also, in addition, is that the quarters are effective with the beginning of the quarter period. So in other words, if you worked in that first quarter, earned $1,000, then that fourth quarter will not be effective until October.
Okay.
Now, this year, a quarter of coverage costs the individual $1,200. So this year, for a person to earn 4 quarters of coverage, they must earn a minimum of $4,800 in order to acquire 4 quarters of coverage this year. So, Bob, if you go out today and earn $4,800, you've earned the quarters of coverage necessary for this year because you earned that minimum $4,800.
Yeah, I remember when I was doing retirement seminars, I had several booked in January, and it was a busy month, and I happened to earn enough that year. It was less than $4,800 years ago, but I earned enough in January, as I recall, to get about 3 credits at least, which pushed me over the top into 40. But yeah, I earned enough in 1 month to get my 40 credits. I don't think I earned all 4 credits that month, but I earned about 3. And then I picked up the fourth probably in February. But yeah, it's much easier and less complicated now than it used to be. But as you say, that's been true since 1978.
Okay, right. So then if we have this kind of in the back of our head and we're going to move through the first person, if they're on the job for a while, they automatically, but somebody that maybe isn't FERS listening to the shows or not CSRS offset might say, what does it take for me to get this? And if they didn't have anything and they're retired, or they didn't have anything and they're 10 years from retirement, probably not 20 years from retirement if they're CSRS, then they go, okay, fine, if I qualify, let's say I just qualify by 1 extra credit. What am I looking at dollar-wise?
Well, the dollar amount is based on what a person has paid into Social Security throughout their working lifetime. So if you put a little bit in, you're going to get a little bit out. The average benefit right now this year, 2014, is $1,294 a month. So that's $1,294 a month. That's on an average. Person had average earnings over their working lifetime. The maximum benefit this year is $2,642. That's a person who's earned the maximum contribution throughout their working lifetime. And we look at the 35 high years of earnings. And what we do when we compute that benefit, Social Security looks at the average index monthly earnings over that person's working lifetime. So the replacement rate is about a 42% replacement rate approximately.
Okay, now for those of you all listening, remember Lester's retired. So when he says we, he worked there a long time and his heart is there, but he's now on the other side.
Absolutely correct, but my heart is still there because many Americans need to know this information. It's very important that they know. And like the statement that Social Security used to send out, they have resumed sending that out on a partial level. When they were sending that out massively, they were sending out 150 million statements a year. That's that statement, that green and white statement that people were getting. And it would show them what they would get in retirement at 62 for retirement age and at age 70. And see, it cost them $70 million to send out that 150 million statements. So now Social Security has devised a way where folks can get that online by registering for My Social Security. So they can go to socialsecurity.gov and create their My Social Security account, and we'll provide them with all that information that they used to get on the statement, and it's paperless.
Okay, so moving forward, I'm knocking at the door, and I got the key to the door. I got my credits. And I come in and say, okay, what am I going to get? Now, this is, you're not talking to anybody. You're online. And it depends, exactly like you say, depending on what you made. Somebody, I think it's Tammy, uses the term, it's a tilted system. So it's favored, if you will, towards the lesser compensated person. And it's not disadvantageous to the highly compensated individual, but as a percentage of replacement of income, it's greater with the lower paid than it is with...
Well, what happens, Social Security indexed those earnings. And what I mean by indexed earnings is when you go back to when you're in high school and college, your earnings were low. So Social Security indexed those earnings to bring them up to pay you the most that you can be paid. So it compares it to today's earnings when they indexed earnings.
Okay, so I qualify for it, and I'm sitting there saying, okay, but I think this beyond the qualification, then I have to ask myself, when do I ask for it? Or excuse me, when do I request the money be starting to be paid to me? The minimum age, correct me if I'm wrong, is 62?
Person can first file for benefits at age 62. And any point after 62, they can file for benefits.
Okay. And then there's another point where it says, well, gee, if you wait from 62 to, say, 65, and I think there's a fraction in here, I can get more. And if I wait till 70, I can get even more. So how does that work?
It works like this. You can take the benefits. A person could file for benefits as early as age 62 and begin to receive that benefit. For each month that they're under what is called the full retirement age, for an example, those persons born between 1943 and 1954, full retirement age is 66. For those people born 1960 and later, full retirement age is 67. But let's look at the group 43 to 54 and say full retirement age is 66. So when that person elects to take the benefit at age 62, that benefit is reduced from the 100% benefit by 25% approximately. On an average, the benefit is reduced by approximately 0.5% per month for each month that they're under the full retirement age. So it's about 0.5% per month reduction.
Okay. So the term full retirement age, to be frank, it used to baffle me. I said, well, somebody retires early because they're law enforcement or military. They're retired. What do you mean full retirement? And if somebody retires at 62 and then 65, well, what about if they're a workaholic and they never want to retire?
Well, just like what John alluded to earlier about the delayed retirement credits, if a person elects not to receive their benefits at full retirement age, for each year that they delay receiving that benefit up to age 70, their benefits can increase. And the benefits increase by a percentage for each year that they wait. So it's an 8% increase.
It's 8% a year. So
that's correct.
Yeah.
It's an 8% increase.
So if your full retirement age is 26, for example, 66, excuse me, and you wait till 70, you get 32% more. It's just simple math. And if your FRA is 67, you'd get 25% more. 24%.
24.
Excuse me.
Okay, we're going to take a break here for our sponsor, WAEPA, W-A-E-P-A, and they're going to tell us about the magic that they work as well.
The responsibilities of balancing a federal career and family life can be overwhelming. How can you assure your family will live well amidst life's transitions? WAEPA, a nonprofit association serving the needs of federal civilian employees since 1943, in partnership with NITP, the national leader in federal benefits, financial literacy, and pre-retirement training, provides answers to your personal planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays, 10:05 a.m., for ideas that could change your future. WAEPA members can now access frequently asked questions on key financial and retirement planning topics at waepa.org. Is your life on track? WAEPA members also receive Fed checks, educational checklists for every stage of life and career. Visit WAEPA today at waepa.org. WAEPA is a proud sponsor of For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
Okay, Lester, we kind of walked through the real baby parts of this. Now, we were just before the break talking about this retirement age. It doesn't mean full retirement age that you retired at that age. It means that if you start your Social Security before your, quote, full retirement age, and you might lose some of it, not because of anything bad that you did, but because you continued working.
Well, regrettably, I would have to correct you there. You're not going to lose.
That's okay.
You're not going to lose anything at the point that you take Social Security, but this is a personal choice that a person has when it is most advantageous for them to begin to receive the benefit. As indicated earlier, if that person delays receiving that retirement benefit until age 70, they could get a 32% increase. For each year after their full retirement age, they get an 8% increase to a maximum of 32% at age 70. So at age 70, usually folks say, I'm done. And they begin to receive their Social Security. But you have folks that are still working. As long as you're working, you're mandated by law to continue to pay into the Social Security. And what will happen is, at the end of the year, they'll look at those additional earnings, and that could, in addition to that 8%, increase that person's benefit.
Okay, but somebody that was unaware of that, if they said, okay, I'm 62, I'm retired, I'm going to take it, but I'm going to work part-time, my Social Security benefit would be reduced until I hit 65 and something.
No. Once you take a reduced benefit, the benefit is always reduced. That person that is under the full retirement age, this year they can earn $15,480. And for every $2 they go over that amount, Social Security wants them to reimburse them with $1. For a person that has reached their, in the year that they reach their full retirement age, this year they can earn $41,400. And for every $3 that they go over that, Social Security wants them to reimburse them $1. Once a person reaches their full retirement age, they can work and earn as much as they want. So looking at that person at 62, they say they're through, they want to retire, they can do so and still earn up to that $15,480. And when they talk about $15,480, they're talking about an employee-employer relationship or a person being self-employed. So the rentals from your rental properties, the book, the royalties from the book that you wrote, your annuities, your pension, those do not count. They're talking about an employee-employer relationship or a person being self-employed, such as what John did. John was a self-employed individual working, paying into Social Security. So therefore, he had to file a Schedule C, which reflects the type of business that he was engaged in, the gross amount of earnings from that business. And then if he grossed $400 or greater, then he filed a Schedule SC, self-employment, which he pays Social Security taxes.
Yeah, okay. At that point, that's the first time I hired a tax accountant.
Wise decision. All righty. And then that issue kind of goes by the boards at what age? And at some age, we don't care about this issue with full retirement age and reimbursing Social Security.
Well, the group between 1943 and 1954, 66 is their full retirement age. So once that person reaches age 66, then they can work, earn as much as they want, and still be entitled to their Social Security. Sounds great, doesn't it?
Everything sounds great.
Yes. Oh, that sounds wonderful, and people love it. When I reach 66, I'm going to retire and get my full Social Security. Well, it sounds good, but what is not being said, for those individuals that have earnings of 25 or have taxable income, let me define it specifically, have taxable income of $25,000 or greater, or a couple that has taxable income of $32,000 or greater, then their Social Security benefit can be taxable anywhere from 50 to 85%.
Okay, that's really important. I thought we'd start out very easy, and this is where this is not hard, but people have to recognize this, being a tax accountant. Number of returns that I do, got a federal retiree receiving Social Security, but isn't taxed at the full 85% on it. Now, this is not an 85% tax, so let's be clear. So if an individual had $10,000 worth of Social Security income, they're not going to pay $8,500 in tax. They just have to report $8,500 and then pay tax at whatever rate. A better way to look at it is it's 15% non-taxable at the federal level, and there are not too many kind of pension-type benefits that are taxed at that low a level, and most states don't assess a state income tax on it. Right. But I don't want to do a lesson on taxes here. We're just talking about cash flow. But here's an individual retired and takes out a chunk of money out of their thrift. The thrift is pretty much fully taxable, but they take a chunk out. And unfortunately, that chunk pushes them up into the next higher percentage tax on the Social Security, and it adds to their Medicare tax on the Social Security. And they call up and they said, what did you do wrong? And, you know, you have to be diplomatic and then go, well, it's really nothing that the computer did wrong or that we did wrong, and it's nothing that you did wrong. It's just these are the tax laws. You needed the money, you took it out, but you didn't know about the repercussions or being blindsided by this.
535 members on Capitol Hill, please do not kill the messenger. Right. So that is just what you indicated. That's the law. And a lot of folks don't understand the just how that affects them by taking that money out the thrift savings plan, having that bulge. But the Part B of Medicare, could be affected based on that income that person receives. Is correct.
Now, we're a benefits planning type firm. This show is a benefits planning type show. So one of the planning pieces here is, do I take it as quickly as I can at 65 without any of this reimbursement business, or do I wait till I'm 70? Now, certainly at 70, I'm going to receive more than what I would have if I hadn't applied for it at 65. But I also have a shorter life expectancy at that period of time, statistically and in reality. So really what I'm doing is I'm giving up 5 years of this benefit that if I had taken it as quickly as I could, in theory, I could have saved it, paid the taxes on it, and then used it later on to make up for what I would have gotten had I not taken anything. Now, this is really hard to do, but this is why we're on the air. So in your career, which was a long career, did you ever, we cannot answer the question on the show because it involves a lot of math and projection, but it also involves some psychology. So when you dealt with people, did this question come up, or was it more, when can I get it?
The question did come up. A lot of folks want to analyze just what's going on. How much can they be entitled to? When can they first receive it? And the best answer for that is Social Security has calculators. When they go online at www.socialsecurity.gov, they have different tools that they can use to estimate when it might be best for them to retire. They can get the register for my Social Security account. They can take that monies that they see there, and then they can go to the calculators. We got calculators number 1, 2, and 3. Number 2 is so easy. They can just plug in those money amounts and do what if scenarios. What if I work longer? What if I stop? What if I earn this amount? What if I stop earning right now? What would I be entitled to? And again, that based on a personal situation of each individual. They have to come to that agreement. It might be that somebody has other investments that they're receiving, so they don't want to tap into their Social Security until 70, such as what John is anticipating. So he's going to take that later versus right now. So he can have his benefit escalated by the 32% plus any additional income that he makes during that course.
Yeah. Now, if I were in questionable health or my lifestyle was not conducive to good health and longevity, then I might not decide to wait. I might take it as early as I could. So that's a factor that you have to apply in your thinking. Do I take it earlier or do I wait and get more? The break-even point, and it's in just raw numbers. Let's say if you took it at 62 and not counting inflation, although you will get COLAs, we hope, and wait as opposed to waiting till 66, it would take you to about age 78. Again, not counting COLAs you would have gotten in those 4 years, to break even. In other words, if you pass 78 and you waited till 66, you're starting to be money ahead. So, and that's a fairly easy calculation to make. And we give, we, at least I did, gave an example during our retirement seminars where I was doing it. What are the break-even points, both for full retirement age and waiting till 70? So if you're from a long-lived family, you might gamble and delay your taking your payment.
Yeah, well, we had a gentleman. I'm going to make this a little less complicated. It was very complicated one time where a person could file and withdraw their application to pay all the money back.
Right.
So they call it file and suspend. Well, this gentleman, his mother lived to be 106. His father lived to be 105, and he knew longevity was on his side. So what he decided to do at age 70 is he came in and paid all the money back that he had received from 62 to 70. So he wrote us a check for about $106,000, paid all the money back because he knew that he was going to live to at least 100 plus. Well, 6 months later, his son came in and said, Dad succumbed to life, and now he's in eternal life. And he asked, could he get the money back that he paid back? And the answer is what? No. So planning for retirement is risky business. So you want to get it right. You want to make sure that every T is crossed, every I is dotted, and no stone is left unturned in calculating that benefit, because this is what's going to run you for the rest of your life financially. So you don't want to plan retirement to go back to work, nor do you want to plan retirement to run out of money.
Okay, well, we have a kind person that emailed us, and they emailed us at 4FOR, your, Y-O-U-R, benefit, at NITPINC.com. Here comes the question. If I file to collect half my husband's benefit when I reach my full retirement age, will my benefit continue to grow until I'm 70?
The answer to that is this. Both the husband and wife would have to be at least their full retirement age. One can take the benefit and the other one can suspend their benefit, and their benefit can continue to grow past the full retirement age up to by the 8%. So at age 70, they'll be entitled to a 32% benefit on their own. But their spouse would not be entitled to that higher amount as a spousal benefit, because we're going to look at what they're going to be entitled to at full retirement age, and that'll be the 50% that the spouse would be entitled to.
Okay.
Well, just to add to that scenario, like the spouse might be entitled to a greater amount because they continue to delay theirs and take their spousal benefit. Well, if that person passes, the higher wage earner passes, then that surviving spouse could be entitled to the higher amount as the widow or widower. But in a living situation, they would only be entitled to the 50% at full retirement age.
Okay. So now we're talking to, you know, the basics, but we're talking now about money. And for those of you prior to the break, I was talking about the taxable portion. One should never shy away from taxes. You want taxes to be your planner, but your first thing you look at is how much money. I'm not being a money grubber here, but what am I going to get? And then after taxes, what do I have? So if I have to pay tax on 85% of it because my income is basically high, I pay 85%, you know, not 85%, but I pay tax on 85%. But again, it's 15% non-taxable, and usually non-taxable on the state. So taxes should not be your first focus. Finances should.
That's absolutely correct.
Okay. Now, Lester, you always have this great saying, click, stick, and stroll.
Yeah. I always said I love the American public to visit Social Security's website, and when they do so, click on it, stick on it, and stroll through it, because there is so much information and so much you can do now online. Like, for an example, the retirement application. That usually takes about 15 to 20 minutes online versus somebody getting in their car, trying to drive to a Social Security office, looking for parking, then come in the office and have to take a number and wait.
Okay.
Got another. Did you get a croissant with that number?
If you buy one somewhere like else.
No. Somebody right. might get sick. Liability pay comes to play.
All right. We have a good friend of the show sends us emails, generally speaking, every week. And one of the emails is, why can't I schedule an appointment online? Secondarily, why does it take so long to get a person on the 800 number?
Well, first of all, hopefully he's not having that kind of problem with our 800 number because they're answering that. But when you look at the population today and you look at the number of calls that we are taking in, there is sometimes a delay in answering right away. You might have to wait a couple of minutes or so forth, but it shouldn't be any longer than that. But the reason they can't make an appointment online is because we have about 1,200 offices across America, and they have what is time slots for windows for people to make that appointment so that when they get to the Social Security office or when we call them up, somebody's available to them. If the American public could just make an appointment with us, we would have no control of that.
Okay, let me ask you this. We're on the East Coast. Not everybody listening is on the East Coast. So if I was to say, I wonder what time the 800 number shuts down, if I'm in California and it's 6 p.m. here, it's only 3 p.m. in California, so do I make a call as late as 9 p.m. on the East Coast and try to get the California person to answer?
Well, what happened is we have what is called 10 mega service centers across America, and that 800 number is from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., but they could visit our website at any time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
I tell you why I asked this. Again, being an accountant, I oftentimes have to call the IRS. Now, during the, quote, normal business hours on the East Coast, forget it. I'm not doing it. I'm calling it at 7 or 8 at night, and I'm not getting anybody on the East Coast. I'm getting somebody Midwest to California, but at least I get through. Maybe not right away, but I get through. Whereas if I call during the day, forget it. So I like this, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.?
Across the nation.
Across the nation. So maybe I get up early on the East Coast.
And you still have the opportunity to call late.
Is it better to call, say, early in the morning or late in the day?
It's your choice.
I know.
Someone will be there for you.
Even if you call peak hours.
Yeah. Okay. I had the opportunity working at the 1-800 number for a while, and I tell you, I went in and I took a headset, one of the old telephones, and held it to my ear. But then I realized I needed a headset because as you finish talking to one person, another person clicks right in. And you're trying to do everything at one time for that person while you have them.
Okay, we got to do one thing right now. We have to hear from our good friends at WAEPA, W-A-E-P-A.
The responsibilities of balancing a federal career and family life can be overwhelming. How can you assure your family will live well amidst life's transitions? WAEPA, a nonprofit association serving the needs of federal civilian employees since 1943. In partnership with NITP, the national leader in federal benefits, financial literacy, and pre-retirement training, provides answers to your personal planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays, 10:05 a.m., for ideas that could change your future. WAEPA members can now access frequently asked questions on key financial and retirement planning topics at waepa.org. Is your life on track? WAEPA members also receive Fed checks, educational checklists for every stage of life and career. Visit WAEPA today at waepa.org. WAEPA is a proud sponsor of For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
Okay, we're back live, and we've got an email. So, Lester, you're generating interest as always. Here's the question. How accurate are Social Security monthly benefit estimates when compared to the real benefit when somebody receives it later than at the time the estimate? Again, the question is, if I get an estimate what my Social Security is going to be, how accurate is it relative to what reality is? And I think one of the, well, let's look at it two ways. I'm pretty much same income level, and I got the estimate somewhat close to qualifying for Social Security. Let's break it into two parts. Let's do the easy one first.
The statement is very accurate. because it's taken in consideration the person's total earnings over their working lifetime. So we're looking at all those years of earnings, and those earnings are being indexed, as I indicated to you earlier, based on that person being in high school and college when they had the low earnings. We're indexing those to bring them up to current day value, pay that person the most back. If the person gets that statement and they want to calculate it on their own, then therefore they can use one of the calculators online, plug that information in, and they'll see the reality right there before them to compare the two, and it should be the same.
Okay, so let's say that we all ask for an estimate today. But between today and when we actually start collecting Social Security, what would cause that estimate to be inaccurate, I would imagine? I have more years under my proverbial belt, so I've got more credits earned. Maybe my income has gone up so that my dollar that I'm entitled to years ago is now $1.10. Now, how does that work?
So that estimate that you got previously to these additional earnings and the cost of living increases was accurate at the time. But now things have changed because you've had additional earnings. There's been a cost of living increase, and the Social Security benefits and all of that will be taken into consideration.
Okay. So things change, estimates change.
And that's how come we encourage the American public. So, well, when I say we, I'm somewhat Social Security encouraged the American public to visit Social Security's website. Again, click on it, stick on it, and stroll through it. File for my Social Security account, so that you can visit that account at any time you want and make sure that those earnings are posted correctly. Make sure that your employer is paying your Social Security benefit. At times you'll find that something might have happened, but you must check on that and make sure it's correct.
Okay, so we're a planning show. It's a planning firm. So if somebody is planning on requesting Social Security to get probably the best fit, maybe they go out a year from when they're going to retire, and it could impact their retirement date. In other words, if I was going to go out a year from today and I looked at my estimate, well, gee, maybe if I worked another few more months, my monthly benefit could go up. No?
It's not going to differential that much.
Okay.
Within a year or month. But again, a person must plan out when they want to retire. And then we encourage folk, well, Social Security, I keep saying we, I've been there so long, over 40 years. And it's sort of hard to break away from a family that you've been in so long. But when you plan that out, Social Security encourage folks to file 3 months in advance to when they want to check direct deposit to the bank.
Okay, good. Got another couple emails from our friend. And we're also at 202-465-3080. Sometimes there are hearings. Now, if you request a Social Security hearing, then you probably have some issue that you want to get across that we can't get across on the phone or the emails or the like. And hearings have a backlog. I read about it in the newspaper just this past week. One of the hearing examiners was talking about the caseload, and they can't just say yes, no, maybe so, and be done with it. There's a lot of study, but there's a backlog. I mean, with you mentioned it earlier. I forget us baby boomers. There's 10,000 of us retiring a day. Is that right? A day?
Approximately, yeah.
Okay, so there is going to be some backlog, and it's probably going to cause some frustration with people that want this hearing because it means so much to them.
Well, when you talk about the backlog of hearing, you look at the economy. And when the economy is not doing as great as it is, a lot of folks are out of work and so forth. They're looking for bridges that can sustain them and their income. So they filed for Social Security disability benefit. Well, we have to make sure that person meet or equal the definition of disability. Just because that person can't work for 4 or 5 months, the definition for Social Security disability is that person can't work for a year or longer. They must be totally disabled, where some folks are partially disabled. But yet we won't be able to determine that until a preponderance of the evidence from all treating medical sources have been obtained and a medical decision has been made. And if one is made not of the person's liking, then what they will do is file a reconsideration. And at the reconsideration, that must be done within 60 days from the date that they got the disallowance letter on the initial application. And then if that reconsideration is denied, that's when the person files for a hearing. And to try to alleviate that backlog, we're hiring more staff, more administrative law judges. So they have to be trained. These folks have to be trained. So we're working very feverishly to render this backlog to do the best that we can to reduce it.
Okay, so a hearing examiner hears the case, if you will, or the issue. And then they have to go back and look at, I guess, prior law. They have to look at the way things were determined upon appeal and the like. So it isn't so much a yes or it's a no. It's, well, we got to follow what we did in the past.
They must look at all the evidence. They will look at all the evidence, and based on the evidence, a person might decide that they want to appear before the administrative law judge. They have that right. Some folks feel that they need an attorney. They have that right. But once all those factors are brought in and the case is looked over thoroughly, then the decision is rendered. If at the administrative law judge's level, that decision is made to pay benefits, and they'll go back retroactively to the date of the initial application to pay the person the benefits. There is a 5-month waiting period from the date the disability is determined. And what that means is a waiting period. So during that period, no benefits are payable. So if the person becomes disabled January 15, 2014, their 5-month waiting period is the first full month that they were entitled. So that would be February, March, April, May, and June. Social Security checks run a month in the rear. So the July check will not come until August.
Okay. All righty. So on the positive side, we can qualify. On the positive side, if there's some issues that we feel that we're entitled to that were either discounted or overlooked, we can file for a hearing, correct?
Reconsideration. Then after the reconsideration, they can file for a hearing.
Okay.
Then if they disagree with that, they can file for an appeals to the hearing.
Okay, so unlike your stroll, this is a, what did you say again? I apply and then?
Well, if you apply for benefits, I said do it online, click on it, stick on it, stroll through it. Right. It's very easy. If a person wants to file for disability, I would also encourage them to begin that process and do it online.
Okay.
At socialsecurity.gov.
Okay, now for those of you that don't remember, the stroll was a dance, I think, in 1910. My grandfather told me about it.
Well, now people say scroll through the applications online, scroll okay. through the information online.
Yeah, the Social Security website is, I think, pretty good. I think it's very good. It's better than it used to be. They made some improvements. It's organized better. It's easier to find things. So, yeah, I mean, that's the best source of information. And, of course, they endeavor to make it as simple as possible. The writing is clear. So by all means, I echo your advice that you should check out the website. www.ssa.gov will get you there.
That's correct. The Social Security says socialsecurity.gov.
Yeah, I know, but I just put in ssa.gov and it gets me there, so because it's less typing.
You're right.
Okay, we've got an email question just 3 minutes ago, and it says the gentleman stated that you can delay your Social Security request after you reach the age of 62. I am a baby boomer. My question is, how can I delay the process if I want to continue to work? I will be eligible for both my federal pension and Social Security, and I was told that OPM will process once I reach 62, regardless if I request it or not.
That's incorrect information. OPM has nothing to do with Social Security, a person filing for Social Security benefits. What affects a person that is going to be entitled to a CRS pension is the windfall elimination provision on their record. That means that when we calculate that benefit and we index those earnings, when Social Security index those earnings, they will not be indexing those earnings for that individual. They're going to pay that individual based on their actual earnings over the years. But that person can first file as early as 62. But if they're going to continue to work, they would not want to file for Social Security benefits. Because again, when we look at, when Social Security looks at a person working, the limit is $15,480. So for every $2 they go over that, Social Security will want them to reimburse them with one. So the person's earnings are substantially more, then they may not want to file for Social Security.
Okay. We should add for you FERS folks out there, which of course are the vast majority of federal employees these days, you are not affected by the windfall elimination provision. So your FERS calculation and your Social Security calculation are done, FERS is done by OPM, Social Security is done by Social Security, and they're separate. There are no offsets. You collect whatever full Social Security benefit any other red-blooded American in the private sector would be entitled to, plus your FERS annuity. So there's no, they're entirely separate calculations.
Okay, let's go back to this person. And this person is 62, and for the moment, let's assume that they are not FERS. They're offset or they're CSR. So let's just say that. And let's just say that we talked about apply and delay or whatever you all called it. And I was entitled to $1,000 a month at 62, and I applied, and I said, well, why should I take it now? Because I'm going to lose it because I'm going to continue to work after 62. So what Lester was saying is they really filed for it too early, even though it was delayed, because they set the bar at $1,000. Whereas if they apply for it at 65, they don't have this issue anymore.
Well, what's going to happen if that person files an application? Used to be to call the file and suspend procedure. So the person at one point could, like I said, this gentleman filed at 62, paid all the benefits back from that he received up to age 70. Well, now you can't do that any longer. Now you have 1 year to withdraw that application. So if that person realizes in that first year that he did not want to receive the Social Security benefits, he can pay all that money back, but it would have to be in the first 12 months.
You can't go on. Underline that. That's a change.
That's correct.
It? Okay.
Yes.
All right.
So it must be in the first 12 months. After the 12 months, he's stuck. So therefore, if his earnings are so great, then what's going to happen is that total Social Security be an overpayment, and he must repay the money fully.
Okay. So the economics take over here. I just don't want to say I got it, and then I can't get it because I'm going to have earned income too high because I chose to take it at 62. I might as well just wait.
Yeah, the simple thing to do is if you're going to earn over the earnings limit, which is what again this year,
$15,480 for those individuals under full retirement.
If you're pretty sure you're going to go over that limit, just don't file for your Social Security benefit, right? Isn't that pretty good advice? Simple.
But let's say I've had it at 63 or 4, and I don't want to wait till 65. Then I apply, right?
Well, you have the right to file at any time after 62 and later. You have the right to file for it. But as John indicated, if your earnings are going to be substantially higher than that $15,480, then you might decide not to file.
Okay, I'm not going to file.
But there may be some reasons there that you might want to file. You might have a spouse that has never worked under Social Security. You might have a spouse that's much older than you and might need Medicare. So you're going to take that unnecessary reduction in order to get them covered for Medicare.
Ah.
So it's a number of different things that could happen that one might want to file. It depends.
Now, everybody hear that? That was very good, and that's square in the heart of economics. One more time, Lester.
It's about money. So a person's spouse may not have ever worked under Social Security covered employment, so don't have enough quarters to qualify on their own. And they might have some conditions that need medical attention. So therefore, their spouse might file for a reduced benefit knowing that they will not be eligible for a cash benefit, but they're doing it so that their spouse can have the Medicare Part A and B because they might be 65 years of age.
What happens if my spouse never worked?
Then they're eligible on your record.
Okay.
Once you begin to receive a benefit.
So what's our final our conclusion here? We got less than 2 minutes or Andrew's going to cut us off. It's a station.
I would definitely encourage the American public to create their account online, and you can control that account. You can get to look it over. You can see it. If you want to calculate what you're going to be entitled to. You can do that too, and you can do what-if scenarios. What if you work longer? What if you earn that amount? And it's all on visiting Social Security's website at socialsecurity.gov. Again, click on it, stick on it, and stroll through it. A lot of information, information on disability, information on retirement, information on Medicare.
John?
I would just correct something. 65 is not the full retirement age unless you were born, I think, before 1938.
Right.
As Lester pointed out, if you're born between 43 and 54, it is 66. And it gets, after 1954, it gets progressively later until, if you were born 1960 or later, it's all the way up to 67. 65, you're thinking about your parents' full retirement age. That's, for most people, that's not true any longer.
Right. Right. For those individuals born prior to 1937 and prior, full retirement age is 62, and then it goes up by increments of 2 months each year after that.
Okay. We have about 2 seconds of implements. Thanks for calling. We'll be back next week with Bart. Bart's going to talk about FSA feds. Gentlemen, thank you for being on the show, and thank you all for listening. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WAPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.